Morning, everyone. It's good to see you back and alert. Another beautiful day ahead of us. For this morning, I'd like to begin with this verse from James chapter 3. I won't read the whole passage about the tongue, but this verse: "For in many things we offend all, if any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man, and able also to bridle the whole body." Today we're going to be looking more at somewhat general but very practical tips or ideas, maybe even do's and don'ts, that might help us out in our communication with others. But before we go there, let's remember some of the territory we rushed across yesterday. The players in any communication deal with perception. They use their powers of perception for the things coming in. You could think of that as a filter or a lens. And the filter affects what finally goes in and how it's perceived and all of that. So if the filter is dark gray, then what came in got turned dark gray on its way in. It may not have been dark gray on its way there. So that's perception. Then there's cognition, what the brain does with the things that are coming in and what it figures out to do in return, what it figures out to do back in sending a message back. And then there is judgment, what the conclusions that we draw about the other person or the message or ourselves. And there is a lot of self-talk and maybe chatter going on in our heads, both directions, at both ends of the conversation. And both players are unique individuals who live their world looking out at the rest. They are. Here's the individual, this is their world, and they look out at the rest of the world. And the person that's speaking to them is something out there in the rest of the world, out and apart from them. And so, I don't know if you ever thought about this, how much we live in our own world. We are us. We know a lot about us. Things we like, things we don't like. And we perceive a lot of things based on our experience and the way it looks to us. Now that's not profound, but it is something we don't often think about. And the part we don't think about is that the person we're speaking with is exactly the same way. How much do you know about yourself that other people don't know? I hope it's a lot, because, well, how much do you know about yourself that other people don't know? And then remember that the person with whom you're speaking is exactly the same way. There are all kinds of emotions and things going on in that person that you are not aware of. There they are, and if you don't make a conscious effort to remember that, you might not remember it when you're in conversation. You might think that they are simple and you are complicated. And that is certainly never the case. So let's remember that in perception, in cognition, and in judgment, there are a lot of ways that we can be wrong or mistaken, and a lot of things can happen that will hinder our ability to understand another person, especially hinder our ability to resolve anything when something needs to be resolved between us. Today I'd like to look at ways that we can be more mindful or pay more attention to what is going on when we're in conversation with somebody else. I'd like to go over a number of ideas, things we can do to increase our mindfulness of the process as we are in it. What's going on? What's going on with the other person? What's going on in our own head in the middle of this process? And is it good? Is it working? Is it not working? And then also I'd like to think about just a little bit about the importance of somehow valuing or appreciating that other side of the conversation. Because if we don't, if you are in conversation with somebody you despise, I can pretty much tell you how the conversation will go. You're not going to get very far. You despise that person. You think there's something terribly wrong with them, maybe. And so we're going to talk about paying attention throughout our conversation and appreciating what we are finding in the other person or what we are seeing in the other person. And then take some of those ideas and look at kinds of conversations that we engage in. If we want to improve our communication and our conversations, our dialogues, we have to put some mind to it. We have to choose to evaluate what's going on in our own head when we are talking with somebody else. What's going on with them? Do you see their emotions? We have to choose, consciously evaluate what's going on, especially in our own self-talk. And self-talk is just that stream of thought or ideas that goes streaming through our mind all the time. I don't know, it doesn't stop for any of us. When you're in a crowd like this at an institute, how many thoughts go whizzing through your mind when you're meeting people and seeing these speakers or listening to these speakers and you're trying to figure out whether they know what they're talking about or what kind of person they are or what must they have been like as a teacher or something like that. There's a lot of thoughts just go through and through and through our mind. We can't stop it. And to stop and step aside from that stream of thought and evaluate it a little bit is a skill that I think all teachers have to work on. It's not an automatic one. We don't automatically step aside from that stream of thought in our mind and evaluate it. But when you're working with students and people every day, the ability to ask yourself, why am I thinking that way about this person? Or why am I feeling, why am I reacting so strongly to this? Why do I want to give that child a tongue lashing? Why? Why do I want to do that? Or why am I thinking that way or feeling that way about that student or that other faculty member? There may very well be reasons that we come up with when we ask ourselves that question. Sometimes not, sometimes we don't understand it, but at least stepping aside from it or stepping away from it in our mind, which is a strange thing to think about it, if we can step away from our own mind and evaluate it from away, we can. But that's a really strange thing. It's a strange thing that we can do that, that we can step aside and evaluate our own what's going on in our own mind. I don't think we really do this automatically. I don't think we do, and so it takes some conscious effort to pay attention to what's going on in our mind. And if we can be honest with ourselves in that process, we will find things racing through our mind that need adjustment. And we will often find things racing through our mind where we have to tell ourselves that's not true, and I actually know it, and yet I was thinking it. I was enjoying that thought, maybe even. But to be able to step aside and say, wait a minute, to yourself is very, very important. Yesterday I mentioned that personality differences can affect conversations and dialogue. They certainly can. And paying a little bit of attention to that, I think if we are the speaker and we are an extrovert, for example, we're going to bump into people who are not extroverts. And what should you remember if that happens? Or you determine that they are not like you? They're not giving blow for blow, or they're not keeping up the speed, or they're just going silent. If you notice that in time, you can be more careful and you can give them more time. Rather than just assuming that I'm winning this conversation and they have nothing to say, truth is, they may be quiet because you haven't given them a chance and they're being offended at your aggressiveness and they are just going to try to stop this conversation and get out of it. If you can notice soon enough that they are not the same as you in this conversation, you might back off and give them time and ask them some questions and give them a chance to speak. And of course, if you're an introvert and you're in a crowd, or you are an introvert and you're a teacher, which is an interesting combination that I'm not sure I've met very often, but it's possible. In any case, if you're an introvert, then you need to learn how to speak up and to say what you're thinking, because people around you won't know if you don't. And it certainly is possible to be an introvert and be offended at everybody, but the fact is, you have not spoken your mind. You have not said it. And so they don't know. Just an example. And again, there's often that continuum from, you know, whether somebody is more of a feeler or more of a thinker. If you're more of a thinker, and some of us certainly are, you can despise somebody that's saying, well, I sort of sometimes feel like, can we just get on with this? Can you just tell me? And then there are those that are more thinkers, and they're logical, and they're trying to dodge in and out of whatever that person said and connect the dots and evaluate it and come back with some point about how that didn't connect to that. And yeah. So be careful about personality, or at least be aware of them, and maybe be aware a little bit of what your own personality tends to be, and remember that that can really make it difficult for people who are perhaps somewhat opposite in personality. Be aware of that. It's worth a lot to spend some time thinking about that. And of course, as a teacher, I'm not a huge fan of all the personality typing and personality studies and all of that. I think there's something there. We know there is. So I'm very slow to suggest that we should go do some personality typing of all of our students and then map out a whole plan for how we're going to relate to each one exactly. But some awareness is very important. And the student that is being very quiet is not always being stubborn. Some of them are terrified. And to yank around their chain and make them stand up and come to the front and do demonstrations because you think they're just being stuck up or something, you may be making a massive mistake. So be aware of it and pay some attention to it, but be slow to analyze and label your students too far. Pay attention to emotion. Not everybody is as good at this, and thinkers aren't as good at this as feelers in that personality continuum, but pay attention to emotion. To not be able to read emotion at all in other people is deemed a handicap. It's a problem that some people actually have, and it is not helpful to them. It's a challenge. They can't read people. Sometimes some individuals somewhere on the autistic spectrum really are challenged with this. Sometimes not, but there are. And when doctors and psychologists work with somebody who cannot read emotion in other people, they're working with something that is a problem. It's a challenge. And so being able to read emotion is really important. Most of us do it quite well. We do it automatically. But some of us may not do so great at that, and we need to pay a little bit more attention. Paying attention to our own emotions and paying attention to the other person's emotions as well. If a conversation is becoming tense and fraught, to be able to mentally step away from it a little bit and calm our emotions down. That was important, what we just heard about keeping our calm, keeping our cool. If we are in a tense situation where conversation is the only thing that might get us out of this situation, watching our level of emotion and stepping away from it, at least in our mind, enough to evaluate what's happening here. Not just what are we talking about, but what's happening in the conversation. Is this really breaking down, or are we going to be able to find our way out of this without the emotion going any higher? Also, when we're working with people, especially when we're working with people that we don't know quite so well, careful about labels and stereotypes. And if we're working with people who we do know quite well, and we've worked with them for a while, be especially careful about the conclusions that you've drawn earlier about this person. Because what are the chances that the individual you've worked with for 2 or 3 years now is actually working on something in their own life? They're working on improving something. It may have been that thing that irritated you and you had this conclusion about them. What if they went for some help and they're working on that and they're gaining some ground? Are you going to give them a chance or aren't you? Are you just going to hang on to those conclusions you drew about them in the past? Be very careful to give people another chance. Allow the conclusions you drew about them in the past to be challenged and changed. Don't hang on to them too much, because we can sometimes just be wrong, and at other times we can be denying somebody the chance to change your mind about them. If we have been brusque and offensive in the past, and we've worked on that, and we think we're gaining some ground, wouldn't we want somebody to give us a little bit of a chance again? A chance to change their mind about us? Treat first impressions as a hypothesis, not a fact. And I think it's good to just not jump in there and draw conclusions. Just suspend that a longer... First impressions can really change the way we speak to somebody and relate to them in conversation. One thing that I could have added yesterday but ran out of time is context. When you bring a student into the office, that is a context that is going to shape that conversation. When you are called into the office, that is a context that will really shape that conversation right away. When you meet somebody at the water cooler or the water fountain, that's a context, and it is very different from the other one I just mentioned. Keep context in mind, especially when you need to work with a sticky situation or one that needs to be talked through. Think about how the context could shape that conversation and choose your context carefully. And maybe just be aware of how the context of a conversation is affecting the way the conversation's going. Perhaps that's what's making the problem and not the other person or even the conversation itself. What I say next is probably good advice for many, many, many things, but it is especially good advice when it comes to communicating and being in dialogue with somebody. Be skeptical of the conclusions and the judgments you're making. Just hold them a little bit more lightly. You don't have to nail that all down and strap it down and screw it fast and epoxy it in place. It's not necessary. You can stop short of being so definitive in what you're concluding about this conversation or this person, and especially about what they are trying to say, because you may be wrong. You may be hearing things that they are not saying. That's entirely possible. You may not be understanding it because you have not had their experience and you don't really know what they're talking about, so you're filling in the gaps with your imagination, and it might not be working very well. So just be skeptical of your own conclusions. Blame in a conversation is much worse than just a speed bump. It can be a wall to run into. If you are in the mood to blame that other person for what happened, it makes it impossible to talk your way through what happened and come to some better understanding or a better relationship again. Blaming the other person. If you are going the conversation, but in your mind you know it was their fault, do you think you're going to talk your way through it? Not probably. Not probably at all. When we are in a situation that is difficult and we need to talk through it, it is especially important to watch our language. Watch the words you choose. And as teachers, we should have not only a fairly large vocabulary, but we should know what words mean, and we should have a very keen sense of their connotation. You can choose wrong words in a conversation and make it really bad. You chose a wrong word, they know what that word means and what it can all mean, and they take it to the very end of the meaning of that word, even if you didn't intend for that to be the case. So choose words very carefully. I've been in conversation already where people used words and I was shocked. I remember the accusation coming that I was a secular teacher. And I know what the word secular means. And really? But you hired me and you have me in front of your students? What is going on here? And am I really not a religious or a spiritual person in the classroom? And of course I pushed back on that, right? You can imagine. What do you mean? I'm secular? I don't think my students would say that. They wish I'd be quiet in morning devotions. It's time to get on with things. This has gone on too long. But, and as we pushed that dialogue forward, it was very clear that they chose the wrong word. It's not what they meant. And they soon were saying, well, that's not what we meant. It's not what we meant at all. And I'm standing there thinking, okay, that's possible, but if that is not at all what you meant, I have a little bit of advice for you. You shouldn't have used the word. I didn't tell them that. I was thinking it, of course, because that really threw me for a loop, and it was not what you meant. Choose words very carefully. Know what words mean and choose them carefully, because you could really be throwing that other person for a big loop, and it was not your intention. You got a word that you sort of knew what it meant, but you applied it incorrectly, and it made a lot of problems. Also, there are words that are judgmental, they're polarizing, they're extreme, and maybe just to keep the audience alive, give me some words that are extreme or polarizing and absolute when you're not talking about something that is that extreme or polarizing or absolute.
Always.
What was the other one? Always and never come to my mind first. You always, you never. And what's the other word I'm using there with always and never? Second person. And if we are aware of the words we're choosing, we can back away from the you and the absolute or the extreme words. And it'll already make a difference just because of word choice. Just because of word choice. Or you really think you have a case about this person, and so in order to make your point as strongly as you can, you choose very loaded words, very emotional words, and you add a lot of intensifiers. You really want to show them how bad they've been, how bad this has been, and so you stretch it a little bit to make your point. Very careful. Keep the language descriptive, equitable, fair. And just take a lighter approach. Take those heavy-duty words out. You don't need that much ammunition. And if you use the ammunition because you really want to make your point, don't be surprised if your ammunition just hurt them and you didn't make your point at all. You shut the thing down. Ammunition, especially big ammunition, has a tendency to hurt. So careful you don't choose it and use it, especially if you have something that needs to be resolved. Perhaps you could use I think or I'm hearing or it seems to me, but maybe I'm wrong. Just take a lighter touch to it. Perhaps I'm wrong. Tell me if I'm wrong. It seems to me or perhaps or sometimes it seems. And now you're speaking not like a thinker but like a feeler, but maybe that's pretty important if there's high emotions about something. Because when people's emotions are up, what they don't want is somebody that's highly logical. That's infuriating. So maybe you don't want to go there. Some conversations can spiral out of control fast. And when that happens, be ready to put the brakes on and back off and slow the thing down. And actually, sometimes it's important to just stop the conversation and have a conversation about the conversation. Maybe just point out to the other person that it seems to me like this is really going places and getting very emotional. you know, maybe we should take a minute. Maybe we should pick this up later. Maybe, and just step aside and actually talk about the conversation itself, because the other person may be reacting naturally, just like we do so often. And maybe that little bit of suggesting that this conversation is getting out of control a little bit, in some way, talk about the conversation for a little bit and get away from the topic that heated up so quickly just for a moment. Or maybe we should go get a coffee. Maybe we should pick this up. Maybe we should... don't derail me. We could talk about whether coffee is a calming agent or not. But there are times when you just need to actually be the one to notice that it has amped up way too quickly, and we need to just stop and evaluate what's happening here just a little bit. And I have never found the other person to resent that. They catch themselves and they realize it too, and yes, okay, so we are going to stay civil here. Let's just back away from this. And there are times when perhaps you initiated a dialogue, did not know that you were taking the lid off of the proverbial can of worms, and the thing blows up in your face because the issue was a lot larger than you had any idea it was. And in a case like that, I think it'd be good to pretty quickly evaluate what's happening and suggest that, you know, maybe we should arrange a time to talk about this somewhere where the context is comfortable. I wasn't aware. And you could even apologize. You could say, I was not aware. I didn't know that all of this was going on. Would you be more comfortable if we just arranged a time to talk about this? What that does is it gives them the option to think about this a bit before we actually have a conversation. Don't you love when somebody pops a conversation on you and you didn't have a chance to think about this? And then they want to go right in. Also, if you're arranging such a conversation with somebody, you know that we need to sit down and talk through something that happened. It's the elephant in the room, right? Have at least enough of courtesy to tell them what you plan to talk about. Oh, we need to talk. Could we get together sometime? I hate that. Especially when it's the principal or the supervisor or something. You want to talk. Okay. What could this possibly be about? And you want to talk 5 days from now or something like that. And I have no idea. My mind is racing. What is this about? What have I done? Please, if you are making an arrangement to talk with somebody, tell them what the agenda is. Even if it leaves you at a disadvantage because they're going to be ready for you. I really think one reason that sometimes when we want to talk with somebody about something, the reason we don't tell them what we want to talk about is because we want to have the advantage of them not being ready for the conversation. That's not good. It's not fair. We don't like it, so don't do it to other people. If you're arranging to talk with somebody, especially if you need to talk, and we're going to talk about control talk in just a bit here, tell them what the agenda is. It's only fair. Because it might not be much anything, and they're going on for 3 days thinking the worst. In all of this, and this sort of follows right from what I just said, honor the other person and value the other person because they are a human being. And yes, they have as many emotions and fears and anxieties and problems as you do. At least as many. Even if you don't think about that very often. So value and honor the other person. It is the Christian thing and the Christ-like thing to do. To honor the other person even when they've actually betrayed your trust or they've offended you or they've done something that really made a problem for you. Honor the other person and value them. Show respect and consideration. Acknowledge their value. And in the words we choose, we can be affirming and acknowledge them. And it'll make a very, very big difference in how ready they are to open up in the conversation. One way that we show respect is to let them finish what they are saying without cutting in or helping them say what they're trying to say because they weren't quite able to say what they wanted to say. Really? You know what they wanted to say so well that you had to help them out with their words? And yet it's tempting when we're teachers and we taught English grammar for 20 years. We know all kinds of words that would express what they're trying to say much better than what they're managing right now. So how about we jump in and help them? No. It's hardly ever welcome. And it often shuts down the conversation, understandably. Because in their mind, they're thinking, well, he doesn't even think I know how to talk. And that may have been a thought that went through my mind, unfortunately. But I should not act on it. Show respect. Let them finish what they are saying. Ask questions. Ask more questions. Be kind about that. If you see there's a vulnerability here, don't go driving through it, because driving through a vulnerability and taking advantage of that is a way to control a situation. It's a way to disarm the other person. So be very careful about that. Ask questions, but show respect in that process. Asking questions does suggest that you do want to know what's going on with them. And if you wait to give your comments or your conclusions about what's going on until you have asked them lots of questions, then they are going to feel as though you at least tried to understand them before you came to any conclusions. Be open to other people. That is not something that some of us come with naturally. Some of us protect ourselves forever from other people. And to the idea of being open with other people and open toward other people is sometimes something that some of us have to really work at. Now, those are general ideas, and many of them come from concepts we talked about yesterday, but maybe making them a bit more practical. I'd like to take the rest of our time here thinking about the kinds of conversations we have, because one thing that we need to do in conversation and in communication is, as quickly as possible, determine how serious this conversation is. How important is it? What kind of conversation or dialogue is it? We don't want to be spending a lot of time sweating over how to ask somebody when this class should end. We don't want, that's not worth our mental energy or other day-to-day simple procedural questions and conversations and back and forth. We don't want to spend a lot of our cognitive power on that. It's not necessary. Of course, remember to be courteous when you're doing this small connecting talk, but still. But then there are times when we should be very, very careful and thinking very fast and evaluating what's happening and choosing carefully. So being careful to evaluate the type of and the seriousness of the conversation that you're up against is very important. If it is day-to-day connection talk, small talk it's often called, then you probably can just be courteous and kind and open toward that person, but proceed. This is fairly safe territory, right? We do a lot of conversation or communication where we are just saying simple things back and forth to each other to get along with life, to get along with the day. Asking the time, asking a schedule question, or asking whether somebody picked something up, if they did that already, or if somebody still needs to do that, or when we're planning to do that. And if you're in a family and there are all kinds of activities going on, your wife will bless you for engaging in that talk, because otherwise you're out of it and don't know what's going on, or it appears like you are. Maybe you're a school teacher and you don't know what's going on at home. You're not having that small talk to make sure we understand what the schedule is and who's doing what and things like that. So engage in it. It's important, but and be courteous, but it's not something we spend a lot of mental energy on. Recognition talk, where we are meeting strangers and we ask them their name if they're not wearing this, and we ask them what their teaching situation is, or we ask them how their day has been going, or we say something about the weather, or we... I've been around people already who, I don't know if they made it their mission, they thought small talk was not very valuable. You should try to get into serious talk with people. Small talk is maybe not good. I would disagree with that. Small talk is very important. much more important than we think. We are emotional and complicated human beings, and we cannot just meet a stranger and go straight into the anxieties that we live with. What does that do? The stranger is needing to process this, and they can't make sense. Why would this person come up to me and start talking about their personal issues within 2 minutes? This is not appropriate. Right? We all know that. And yet, some people, in an attempt to be authentic and open to everybody, they go straight into things that are not appropriately talked about with somebody who doesn't know you or you don't know them. Small talk bridges that gap from not knowing that person to maybe knowing that person. Maybe knowing that person well enough where you could talk more than small talk. You could talk about your personal struggles. But small talk is very important. It allows us to interact with other human beings without putting subjects on the table that are very uncomfortable, because we don't know what this person, we don't know who this person is or why they're saying this to me. We don't know what's going on here. And we have some experience with this. Perhaps we've already had the experience where we dove in and got too personal too quickly, and we noticed this person feet turn toward the exits and their eyes are checking where the doors are. And it was too much. It was too soon. So small talk is very important. We learn about somebody else through small talk. And we find people with whom we have things in common through small talk. Talking about the weather is not a waste of time. You're not talking about the weather. You're learning something about this person in real time. Talking about your drive here or your flight here, it's not something that's worthless. You're having a conversation and you're learning a lot about that person in that small talk. It covers a lot of subjects. It's usually superficial, and that's why some people are suspicious about it. They don't want to be a superficial person, so they don't like to engage in small talk. Actually, when you're learning to know people, superficial and putting forward a good front is not all wrong. You really want to put the dirty laundry in front of their face right out of the gate? You really want to do that? I don't think so. Like I said, they're going to be very uncomfortable with that and probably find a way to find somebody else to talk about. And you will have cut yourself off from the possibility of learning to know that person and of discovering that you have some things in common. You discover these things through small talk. So do not disparage small talk. It's important. Many times it's important so that we understand each other and we know what's going on and we know how to interact with each other throughout the day. Many times it is how we learn to know people. And how many times have we engaged in small talk, talked about things that neither of us were actually interested in, but eventually we discovered that we have some common interests, and we end up developing a relationship and a friendship that goes for a long time just because we did a bunch of cherry picking of random, unimportant things we talked about, and lo and behold, we picked up on something that we had in common and then pursued that. There are many times when somebody simply wants to be connected with you, and so they come around pestering you with small talk. Did they really come to you to talk about what the weather forecast is? What are the chances? I would think slim. I think the chances are slim. But here they've come and they want to talk, and they're talking about things that aren't important. Sometimes that's because they want to talk to somebody, and that's how they get it going, and they want some attention. Children will do this frequently, and even students will do this. They'll engage in small surface talk just because they want to have a conversation with the teacher. They want to be seen as somebody that's actually worth enough that a teacher would stop what they're doing and talk to them. So when students initiate small talk, take them up on it. And don't dive deeply, because if they're adolescents, they're not probably really looking for that. But if you discover or you evaluate that they started small talk because they want to talk about something serious, then be open to that, but be patient. Give them a chance to come around to that, or give them some leading questions or something, because I find that Adolescents find it, and by the way, that's the only students I ever worked with, 14 years old and older. So, and I find that in that age bracket, they are not comfortable coming up to their teacher and diving into some kind of serious subject with them and initiating that. That is, very few of them are good at that or comfortable doing that. And so when they come with small talk, you should be very alert as to why, you know, why are they doing this? Why are they coming around to say this stuff? And it wasn't important at all. Very often I found that the small talk was their way to try to get some conversation going because they really did want to say something else. So if we are closed to small talk and stuff that really doesn't amount to anything, we will miss that opportunity. And they will sometimes have the small talk and walk away, and they didn't say what they wanted to say because they didn't get up the nerve and you didn't give them the comfortable zone to do that or the leading question that made it easy for them to then say what they wanted to. So small talk very often can lead into serious talk. It's the way in. Then there is controlling talk. Generally, this is negative when we talk to control somebody else or to manipulate somebody else. But control talk can be light control talk or strong control talk. And teachers and parents are constantly using light control talk, where we are giving an order of some kind or the other, and we are not having a dialogue about this. We're kind but firm, and we are telling somebody that we are responsible for what they should do and what they are not allowed to do. That is controlling, and we use language to do it. We usually use language first to do it anyway, for sure. Or I hope we do. And many times, if we are good at communicating, not every time, of course, but many times we're good at communicating, language is enough to control the situation. That I would refer to as light control talk. It's not powerful. You're not doing it to manipulate them or anything like that or to offend them. Parents use this to children. Teachers use them to students. Managers use them to workers. Owners use them to subcontractors or whatever. This is the kind of, no, we're going to do it this way. And you must do it this way. It is a form of control, but not a bad form of control. The problem with that kind of control talk is remembering when to use it and when not to use it. If you are trying to use some of the same way of talking that you use with your students to your colleague, now you're creating some trouble because things are stacked like this, not like this. When the student or the child understands that this person actually is in the place to say these things to me. If this person speaks that way to this person, then it becomes fraught quite quickly. And the light control talk with an equal or somebody that's older very, very quickly feels disrespectful. And we just need to be aware that as teachers, we're using that light control talk all the time. Remember to stop it when you're talking to your co-teacher or parents. If you want a parent that will work very closely with you, try some control talk on them. I'm not going to say much about strong control talk because it doesn't work. It does not get you what you want. Well, maybe it will because they will just concede to get out of this miserable situation, but it will not get you goodwill and it will not get you somebody that will work with you about something or with something. I don't know if anything good comes from it normally. Now, the kind of talk that we need to use when a situation is difficult, we need to talk our way out of a problem, whatever that problem is. I like to refer to that as I'm going to use the term dialogue talk because dialogue indicates that this is a somewhat equal and equitable back and forth. Right? You're not doing all the talking. You're talking and giving each other time to speak somewhat equally. Because in dialogue talk, you are considering each other as equals who need to work something out. And in that, if you're in a situation that requires that kind of talk, Maybe you have a student that needs corrected. The behavior has not been satisfactory. And you need to sit down somewhere with them. Probably not over coffee. Well, you can have the coffee. But no. You need to especially focus on managing yourself. Because in dialogue talk, the more serious the situation, the more potential there is for emotion to get in there and make a mess of things. So managing ourselves, we could think about this spiritually and talk about the fruit of the Spirit and being a spiritual person when we need to have a difficult conversation. A spiritual person is focusing on managing themselves and remembering to be gracious, remembering to be kind, remembering to honor the other person when that's the last thing we really feel like doing. Managing ourselves instead of controlling the situation or the other person. It usually requires being quiet and suspending our judgment or being suspicious of what we have already figured out. We are more interested and need to tell ourselves over and over again, I want to know what's going on here. I want to find out what happened. I want to find out from them. I don't just want them to know what I'm thinking. That's one-sided. And if I go straight in to let them know how I felt about this, or what I think about this, or how it affected me, if you initiated the conversation, then it is your job to invite them to go first, after you've at least explained why you want to have this conversation. Go into questions that invite them to share their side of it or show their perspective first. So this is a back and forth. You suggested the conversation. You told them what it was going to be about. You arranged a meeting. And then you go into that. And you are not somehow the only moderator in this meeting. And yet, if you initiate a conversation, it's your job to let them go first. As much as they're comfortable or willing to share, give them the chance to go first. Remembering that we both have to be open to each other and vulnerable. We can't hide what we're thinking and expect them to share what they are thinking. That doesn't work. That's one-sided, and the imbalance is going to be felt pretty quickly. We need to show our hand and be vulnerable. And sometimes showing our hand is a pretty scary thing to do. You're talking to somebody with whom you've had a disagreement, and when it's appropriate, it might be all right to actually tell them how you felt about this or what you were thinking about this. And that's not a comfortable thing to say to somebody who may have done something quite offensive. And yet, you're not punishing them by telling them that necessarily. They may not have been aware of it at all. And it could open up a conversation that solves itself almost, simply because you had the nerve to tell them how that affected you, when you didn't really want to tell them that. So be vulnerable and open to each other. It's probably the only way you're going to be able to speak about what's happened or what's happening. Remember that your side of the story makes a ton of sense to you. Makes complete sense in here, but might not make any sense in their head. And the assumptions we can make can really keep us from finding a solution to the difficulty. We assume that anybody with half a brain would also understand what I understand about this. That's not true. It's not true. Maybe there's something wrong with my brain. That's not wrong with theirs. And we simply are thinking about a situation very differently. Remember that our perception is not perfect. And so what they perceived about the situation is likely to be different from what we perceived about the situation. Somehow, when we have to have different, difficult conversations, we have to be completely grown up. We can't be whining and complaining about the situation, even if it was very hurtful and very difficult, to go whining away about how bad this was to the other person. After a bit, they're sitting there wondering, well, now what could I possibly say to make this person happy again? What could I... Was it that bad? We need to be adults about it, and we need to also be adult enough to take full responsibility for the things we've done to create this difficult situation and seek out from them what it is. What is it? Again, choosing words becomes very, very important. Questions. Who? What happened? Tell me in your own words. Where and when? How? How much? What happened then? Maybe even once you're into the conversation, how did that affect you? How did you feel about that? Perhaps. What's one question that I did not include here? Who, what, when, where, how many?
Why
was the one I didn't include, and it's the one you want to avoid, and it's the first one that comes to our mind. Why did you do this? We want to know. It didn't make sense to us. But if you open a conversation with somebody with, why did you do this? That's a conversation stopper. Or it puts them on a strong defensive immediately because you've attacked them right out of the gate. You've set the dogs loose on them. And don't be surprised if they defend themselves, because that's what people do when you set the dogs loose on them. And so why is not a question that you want to ask first, or maybe even ever ask. Find another way to take this conversation with other questions and take this conversation to them revealing the why without you having demanded it. And you'll be a lot more successful in resolving the situation, for sure. Why did you do it? The only sensible response for them is to come up with a big long explanation of why they did it and why it was right, because you've just challenged them on it. Take a softer approach and avoid that question. As you go, to show that you do honor that other person, use affirming language. I appreciate that you said that. I like that idea. Or, well, that makes sense to me. That's right. Use that affirming language as much as you can. Be sincere about it. You're not a salesman trying to sell them another car. They use all kinds of affirming language. Enough of affirming language that you want to just, I don't know what, be rude. It's usually what I want to be. You're clearly trying to sell me something. Would you stop it? So the affirming language we use needs to be sincere. Look for things that they are saying that you can say, no, that's true. I understand. I understand why you would have done that. That makes sense. Use that affirming language and you can probably tease a lot more information out of them, because they think that you do appreciate them and you do want to hear what they have to say, or you want to hear their side. Ask questions that are leading questions. Maybe a simple one would be, is there anything else? Did I miss something? Did I not see everything? Was there something that had happened earlier that morning I'm not aware of? Is there something I don't know? Is there anything else? If we go through the conversation quickly because we're watching our clock and we need to go places and finish this thing up and we need to come to a conclusion and move on, they may have had something else important they would have really liked to tell us, but we didn't give them opportunity because we thought we heard what we need to know and okay, we're set to go again. The question of, was there anything else? Anything else you would like to ask or share? Is there something else yet? Give them a chance, because the introvert's going to need that question before they're going to plug that in there. And then give them time to formulate what their question is. There are times when you open up the door for the other person to say something and they don't know how to say what they are thinking or feeling. And the only thing we can do is be quiet. Be quiet. Maybe some head nodding. Maybe some... Sometimes it stalls completely, then you have a bit of a thing to figure out. Are you going to just sit there in this uncomfortable silence? There are times when another leading question might help them get going again, or there are times, but don't try to say it for them. Whatever it is they're attempting to get out, don't try to say it for them. It'd be very tempting when we're interested in efficiency and we're the logical type. Watch your body language and their body language. Sit down with each other, but be careful how closed off you are with body language. we can really cover our face or protect ourselves. Generally speaking, anything that brings all our limbs in here is closed off body language, whatever that is. If you're teaching and you're always doing this, whatever, I don't know. This looks like you're afraid they're going to throw a sandwich. Some of us are habitual arm crossers. I would say if you're a teacher, become a less habitual arm crosser. This is closed off, generally, in a conversation, in a dialogue. It's get your hands away. Anyway, stay open and friendly toward the person in your body language. It's very important. When you have heard what they have to say, find a courteous way to play it back to them. Well, I'm hearing that you so-and-so-and-so, or did I understand correctly that this was the thing that bothered you the most? And let them say yes or no. You'd be surprised how many times they say, well, no, it's not really. Well, good, you're going to get a little bit more information now, just because you said, now, am I understanding correctly? Is this what you meant, or is this what you said? And give them a chance to make corrections, because they may be trying to figure out what to say just as much as you are. Give them a chance to do that. Maybe simply four don'ts. Don't give your opinion or advice until it's asked for. Try not to interrupt or show them how they are wrong. Their opinion about us or their conclusion about the situation was just not how it was. Don't tell them how or what they should be thinking or feeling. Oh, you shouldn't feel that way about it. It wasn't that way. What, you're telling me how to feel about something? That's an interesting attempt. Now you're telling me that my feelings are wrong too, on top of what I said was wrong. Now you're saying my feelings are wrong too. That's very welcoming. Don't use the other's story as a primer for your own. Don't top off their story. Oh yeah, well I know what that's like. Maybe you do, but it's not useful in that conversation. Tomorrow we're going to talk about conversation in the classroom itself. Thank you.